On this 21st day of February 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are on in chapter 18, the perfection of renunciation, text number 66. 1866. Sarva dharman padityajya mame kang sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami mashitaha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Purport. The Lord has described various kinds of knowledge and processes of religion. Knowledge of the Supreme Brahman, knowledge of the Supersoul, knowledge of the different types of orders and statuses of social life, knowledge of the renounced order of life, knowledge of non-attachment, sense and mind control, meditation, etc. He has described in so many ways different types of religion. Now, in summarizing the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should give up all the processes that have been explained to him. He should simply surrender to Krishna. That surrender will save him from all kinds of sinful reactions, for the Lord personally promises to protect him. In the seventh chapter, it was said that only one who has become free from all sinful reactions can take to the worship of Lord Krishna. Thus, one may think that unless he is free from all sinful reactions, he cannot take to the surrendering process. To such doubts, it is here said that even if one is not free from all sinful reactions, simply by the process of surrendering to Sri Krishna, he is automatically freed. There is no need of strenuous effort to free oneself from sinful reactions. One should unhesitatingly accept Krishna as the supreme savior of all living entities. With faith and love, one should surrender unto him. The process of surrender to Krishna is described in the Hari Bhakti Vilas 11.676. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam rakshishyatiti vishvaso goptritve varanantata atmanikshepa karpanye shadvidha shadanagatihi. According to the devotional process, one should simply accept such religious principles that will lead ultimately to the devotional service of the Lord. One may perform a particular occupational duty according to his position in the social order. But if by executing his duty one does not come to the point of Krishna consciousness, all his activities are in vain. Anything that does not lead to the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness should be avoided. One should be confident that in all circumstances, Krishna will protect him from all difficulties. There is no need of thinking how one should keep body and soul together. Krishna will see to that. One should always think himself helpless and should consider Krishna the only basis for his progress in life. As soon as one seriously engages himself in devotional service to the Lord in full Krishna consciousness, at once he becomes freed from all contamination of material nature. There are different processes of religion and purificatory processes by cultivation of knowledge, meditation in the mystic yoga system, etc. But one who surrenders unto Krishna does not have to execute so many methods. That simple surrender unto Krishna will save him from unnecessarily wasting time. One can thus make all progress at once and be freed from all sinful reactions. One should be attracted by the beautiful vision of Krishna. His name is Krishna because he is all attractive. One who becomes attracted by the beautiful, all-powerful, omnipotent vision of Krishna is fortunate. There are different kinds of transcendentalists. Some of them are attached to the impersonal Brahman vision. Some of them are attracted by the Supersoul feature, etc. But one who is attracted to the personal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and above all, one who is attracted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Krishna himself is the most perfect transcendentalist. In other words, devotional service to Krishna in full consciousness is the most confidential part of knowledge, and this is the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Karma yogis, empiric philosophers, mystics, and devotees are all called transcendentalists, but one who is a pure devotee is the best of all. The particular words used here, ma shuchaha, don't fear, don't hesitate, don't worry, are very significant. One may be perplexed as to how one can give up all kinds of religious forms and simply surrender unto Krishna, but such worry is useless. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam mena tasmai shri gurave. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So this is the culminating verse in Krishna's instructions to Arjuna in this Bhagavad Gita. And this verse really is the last verse also is essential to understanding. How does one surrender? How does one go about doing this? Now, Srila Prabhupada quotes in this purport, this formula from the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is also quoted in the Bhakti Samhita Sindhu. And this is like the opens the door to bhakti. This anukulyasya sankalpa praktikulyasya varjanam. To accept everything favorable for devotional service and reject everything unfavorable. Those two formulas, you could spend a lifetime, more than one lifetime, trying to do that. But that really is, these are preliminaries. We have to know what is favorable, first of all, and for that we need to consult the Shastra and the spiritual master and the realized souls, sadhus. But once knowing that, what is truly favorable and what is truly unfavorable, then we need to actually do that as a matter of duty. This is explained in the end of the 16th chapter. You may recall that the 16th chapter is all about the divine and demoniac. Mostly the demoniac qualities are described. And one of the chief qualities of the demoniac or the asuras is that they don't know. They don't know what is to be done and what is not to be done. And they don't want to know. They don't want to know from any other source. They want to figure it out on their own, what's good and what's bad. And so being cut off from the instruction of Shastra and what to speak of devotees and saints, they concoct their own religion or lack of religion. They declare there's no God, there's nobody in control. And because of this attitude, they remain bound up by the modes of nature and asha, pasha, shatara, by thousands and thousands of material desires. So at the end of that chapter, Krishna says that this Shastra is the real pramana. This is the essence. Ye Shastra vidamutsuja vartate kama karataha nasa siddham abapnoti nasu kum na param gatim. That one who discards the injunctions of Shastra and simply acts according to one's whim, not caring what is favorable or unfavorable for spiritual advancement, one cannot achieve with that kind of attitude any kind of perfection, happiness, or the supreme goal. And therefore, tasma chastam pramanam te karya karya vivastito. One should consult Shastra, the realized scripture given by the pure devotees as it is, for understanding what is to be done and what's not to be done. This is a key element. And knowing that, one should actually avoid what is not to be done and do what is supposed to be done. That's the last line or two lines of the 16th chapter. Now, we've read through the whole Bhagavad Gita, and it's really, everything has been distilled now in these two verses. The previous verse explains what it means to act on the surrendered platform to Krishna. Think of him, to become his devotee, which has many different parts, to sacrifice everything for him, worship him, and to bow down, to recognize his supremacy in every facet of life. This is what it means to be surrendered to Krishna. And in Arjuna's case, of course, the key act of surrender is that he's going to fight. If he surrenders, he'll fight. If he's not surrendered, he won't fight. But as Krishna has just explained, if out of false ego you have not heard me, and you act on your own, then you'll be overwhelmed by the difficulties of this world. But if you do hear me and you act according to my instruction and think of me with your mind on me, you'll overcome all hurdles. You may remember. Now it's interesting that this chapter began. I was thinking of this as we read this purport, with a whole discussion of jnana, tapa, austerities, different things that one is not meant to give up. You remember Arjuna asked a question. I wish to understand the purpose of renunciation and of the renounced order of life, sannyas, O killer of the Keshi demon, master of the senses. This chapter is, after all, called the perfection of renunciation. It's Vairagya Yoga. Tyaga Yoga, I forget which the official name is. So then Krishna goes on to start describing how jnana, dana, tapa, and karma, sacrifices, charity, austerities, pious activities, they're not to be given up because they purify. Right? Even the realized souls, some learned men declare that all kinds of fruitive activities should be given up as faulty. Others say maintain that acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance should never be abandoned. And so then he says, now hear my judgment. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, they purify even the great souls. You see? And he goes on to explain these different things in different modes of nature. Right? But now he's saying, don't worry about all that. In other words, don't try to do these things outside of the realm of devotional service. Once you're in the warm embrace, if you will, of Krishna and his instructions and his devotees, then everything is taken care of. Whatever charity, do we have to? If you're actually a full-time devotee trying to serve, where's there any question of charity? You're giving your prana, artha, diya, vacha. Krishna says in the 10th chapter, your life force, your wealth, your words, your intelligence, if it's truly dedicated to Krishna, this is the best charity. It's not just the best charity for the Krishna conscious movement. It's the best charity for everyone. It's the greatest welfare work, is to give the knowledge by which one can come or escape from the bonds of material energy and attain an eternal life of peace and happiness. What could be a greater charity than that? And that means that even someone who's just doing, a bhakta is just cleaning the temple, which is very important. Don't mean to say just, but it's very important. They're doing the greatest charity, greater than, all the education work and the African, all this stuff. Because it goes to maintain the temple and the institution by which, and therefore the beacon of knowledge remains bright. Someone comes in touch with the temple, with those in the temple, with the books, with all of the institution itself is the greatest charity. You see what I'm saying? So you don't have to worry separately, am I doing enough charity? What about austerity? Well, we have our natural austerities. If you're going to be a serious devotee, we have our four regulative principles. For many people, those are inconceivable. They'd rather climb the Himalayan mountains than to try to give up illicit sex, gambling, meeting, and intoxication. those are austerities. Getting up early. If you can't get up early, it's practically impossible to be a serious devotee. It's just the way it is. The best time, the most auspicious time for spiritual practices are early morning hours, Brahma Muhurta, 4:30, those hours. It's calm, it's just natural to chant, to perform our regular sadhana. That can be a huge austerity because it means getting to bed early. When all of the usual nonsense activities are going on. So, but tapasya, going out, meeting people, the other tapasya, giving up these four things that I mentioned, that's your tapa. No need to worry about it separately. It's an integral part of bhakti, you see. As far as activities go, we don't do fruit of activities should be minimized, but there's plenty of activity, giving over the fruits of activity. So you see, this is what I say, sarva dharman. Now the word dharma should be carefully understood, because in the second chapter of Bhagavatam, the whole thing is about dharma. In fact, the Bhagavatam, this Bhagavad Gita, begins with the word dharma, dharma chaitre, kuru chaitre, right? Dharma is this dharma throughout. And so, but here Krishna says, give up all dharma. So what does he mean? What's the inner meaning here? The idea is that, let's think about chapter 2 of the first canto for a moment. A very important section where the sages of Naimisharanya are questioning Suta Goswami, and they're asking him, please tell us what is the essence of all of the revealed scripture, and what is that dharma, what is that practice by which the soul can be completely satisfied? That was the question. And he praised the question. He said, Muni Aksara Pushto Hum. I have been well questioned by you, because the answer to that question is for the welfare of every living being, every human being. You know. So then the answer is Savai Pungsang Paro Dharma Yato Bhakti Hokshaje. That real dharma is that which awakens bhakti, loving devotional service to Arhokshaja, Krishna, who is beyond, who is transcendental, beyond the reach of the senses and mind, material senses and mind. But what is the quality of that bhakti? Ahoituki and apratihata. It has to be unmotivated, means no material motivation. This is the kind of religion that you have to give up. Religiosity. You know, Prabhupada would qualify, okay, there's religiosity. It's a kaitava dharma. And it has to be uninterrupted. Those two things. And that will completely satisfy the self. So right away, at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, you have this flag, you know, you have this statement. This book, you know, it starts at the very second verse. But here he's saying, we're not dealing with any kind of materially motivated religion here. That's mentioned in Bhagavatam, but it's always rejected. I was just reading the second canto. There's this whole laundry list, you know, the second canto. If you want to get a beautiful body, you know, strong body, you worship Indra. If you want knowledge, of course you worship Saraswati. You want good health, worship Surya. There's a whole, it goes on and on, you know. Worship Uma for a good wife, I think, like that. But then the culmination is, Akama Sava Koma Va, Moksha Kama Hodara Tivreina Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purushampara. Now this morning we heard that very same phrase. You were in the lecture Prabhupada gave with Kapila Dev. Tivreina Bhakti Yogena in the third canon. So what is he saying there? He says, okay, whether you're free of all material desire, or you're full of all kinds of desires, or you're liberated, right, moksha, those who are intelligent will render intense devotional service unto the Supreme Person, Krishna. Yajeta Purusham Param. So the idea is that these other dharmas that Krishna is saying you should give up here all have, to one degree or another, a tinge of material motivation. And therefore, they cannot bring you to the final goal. They may give you some nicer situation in the material world, but that's no solution to your problem, because eventually whatever you get from these gods or goddesses is going to be spent. Your piety, your punya, is going to be finished, and you'll have to come back down to square one. Krishna describes that in the ninth chapter very graphically, you know. So this is the kind of dharma, not the Sanatana dharma or the Bhagavad dharma or the sadhana of bhakti that will take you to the point where you won't care about dharma anymore. The gopis in Vrindavan, the cowherd boys, the plants, you know, the cows, they don't worry about dharma. There's no question of dharma. You know, dharma is for us. Dharma is a restriction. Do this, don't do that. Go on a path. The bhakti marga. But once you get to the end of the path, you're spontaneously serving Krishna in deep love, then that's the goal. There's no question of do's and don'ts. The only do's that you can want to even think about is that which will please Krishna. You're already there, you see? So this is the point that he's making here, is that don't worry about karma and jnana and dhyana. Don't worry about pious activity or, you know, don't worry about the philosophy behind it. Don't even worry about meditating on me. You simply surrender to me at every moment, and everything will be taken care of. And this is why we have a chance. This is why we, or myself, who's completely unqualified to practice any kind of serious yoga, you know, dhyana yoga. You read chapter 6, or you know more details in the Bhagavatam or elsewhere. It's inconceivable, you know. That our only hope, really, is the cooling lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, which we were talking about yesterday, is that to be swept up in the Sankirtan movement, which means to surrender, if you will, to the chanting of the holy name. And, you know, it's not a surrender. At a certain point, it's fun, right? Lord Chaitanya made it fun, the dancing and the chanting, but you actually have to do it. And you actually have to let yourself get swept up in it. If you have no faith, if you avoid it, if you have doubts, and then the magic of the holy name, the power of Krishna cannot enter your heart. You have that freedom. of avoiding, you know, the expanding ocean of the love that Lord Chaitanya is giving. This is what the Sankirtan movement is about. And then all of this becomes possible for us. And you know, you read this verse, Sarva Dharma Mamekam. Okay, you know, I'm going to make a go of that. I can, you know, possibly see myself doing that, because the chanting of the holy name, both in kirtan and in japa, gives you the inspiration to actually want to serve Krishna, and that desire to serve Krishna gradually covers all the other desires. This is the power of bhakti to Krishna, not to even any other form, practically, to the all-attractive, you know, infinitely beautiful, sweet form of Krishna. That's what will destroy these other desires and enable us, possibly, you know, if we're serious, to come to the point of realizing Krishna. There's so many wonderful descriptions in Bhagavatam. One that comes to mind is, Prabhupada would quote this, a verse of the Kumaras. You know, they're giving their instructions to Maharaj Prithu. I highly recommend this. Fourth canto. There's some really wonderful verses in there. And one that Prabhupada would always quote is, Yat para pankaja palasha vilasa bhaktya karmashayan gratitam udgutayanti santa tadvanna rikta matayo yatayo piruddha sroto ganastamalavam bhajavasudevam. So what he's saying there is that Yat para pankaja palasha vilasa bhaktya, that by the loving devotional service to Krishna's lotus feet, and specifically the toes, he's saying, Pada Pankaja Palasha, there's a vilas. There is a pleasure there, if you do it right, and you're serious about it, that there will be a sweet pleasure that comes from serving this lotus feet. And though that pleasure, that vilas, karmashayam gratitam udgutayanti, it will destroy the knots. Remember we spoke about this word asha? We just mentioned asha, pasha. So it's called karmashayam. Means the ardent desires for food of activity and food of results. This is called karmashayam. They're like knots, gratitam. But these gratitam, these knots are udgratayanti. They're untied or cut by the pleasure of serving Krishna. That is essential. And so, for who? The santas. We're sitting here in San Diego. You go a little north, you get to Santa Rosa. The name, it's the same word. The saints, the devotees. Others, tadvanna rikta matayo yatayo viruddha srot aganastamadanam bhajavasudeva. He says, as far as other goes, the jnanis, the really serious jnanis, the yogis, and others who try strenuously to overcome these desires by their means, speculation, pranayama, severe austerities, meditation, you know. They look at the bhaktas as frivolous, right? The bhaktas are just sentimentalists. This was Prakashananda Saraswati's assessment of Lord Chaitanya when he came to Banaras, right? Always chanting and dancing, singing songs, you know, doing this puja and all this stuff. Let's get into some real serious meditation here and open the Vedanta Sutra. You know, I associated with these people. I know in 1972 I came this close to becoming a Vedantist with the Ramakrishna Mission in New York. And there was my Vedantist teacher. He was impressive. He was powerful. You know, I didn't know anything. And but you know, there's a dryness there. You know, when I would go down to the Hare Krishna temple. So I started to get drawn in by good fortune and the mercy of the devotees, Prabhupada and everything. And so there was a struggle there, you know, back and forth. But you know, once Gaur Purnima came, which is always a high point, you know, and the devotees were bouncing off the walls. I think they had a festival in Central Park that I got into, you know, and I was all alive, and I came to my teacher, my guru, my perfective guru. I shared it with him, but he knew that I was going to get swept away, you know, so he tried to break my faith in them by calling them sentimentalists, and exactly this thing that that's for the lower classes. You know, the real thing is gyan. It's gyan. If you want to be, you know, they really believe that. And by my good fortune, instead of breaking my faith in them, it broke my faith in him. And I was able to break free of that entanglement. But so this is, you know, our only hope, really. Our only hope is I often think of this phrase, the last shall be first and the first shall be last, you know, from the Bible. So, in this age, Kali Yuga, we're disqualified in so many ways. You know, we don't live very long. We're always disturbed. We're lazy in the matter of spiritual advancement. And even if we do look for some spiritual advancement, we're mostly misguided. Right? This is all in that verse. Prayana pa shaksabya. So, what advantage do we have? You know, the only advantage we have is the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Meaning that by his efforts and by his representatives' efforts, this movement is spread, and it offers an opportunity to the lowest to kind of, it's almost like a jujitsu thing. You know, we're so low that it's easy to be humble. It's a lot easier to be humble, to recognize, oh, you know, I'm nothing compared to, you know, Krishna, compared to the great devotees. Let me just, you know, do some humble service. That attitude is so valuable. You know, Trinadapi Sunichena. This is the verse from the Shikshastika describing the attitude that Lord Chaitanya, God himself, is telling us that we need in order to chant the name successfully, constantly. To be completely humble, just like the straw on the street. To be tolerant like the tree. To not want any honor for oneself and to give honor to others. Well, if we really assess where we're at, you know, realistically, you know, I myself am not worth much more than the straw on the street, you know. And so, I should give honor to these great souls. You see what I'm getting at? But, say, you know, in the previous ages, you know, where everyone, you know, lived for so long, 10,000 years, 100,000 years, you know, strong bodies, they could do yoga, they could do all these things. You see how harder it is to come from that point to be just a humble devotee. You see? And that's why all of these processes are necessary. You're very wealthy, you're very powerful. Give so much charity. You're very strong, you know, your body is so powerful. Do some real serious austerities. Go to the Himalayas, you know, go, you know, to the hot sun and all these things. Well, that's not for us. We're already at the point where we're beat down. But because we're so unqualified, therefore we're more qualified, you know, for the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, provided that we take a humble position and provided that we chant the holy name. This is the, you know, the value of this age. And that's why in the 11th canto, which we read this some time ago when the Navi Yogendras were speaking to Maharaj Nimi. It was so long ago, most of you probably forgot. But I remember I memorized this verse. It's in this section where he's describing the different avatars that are coming in the different yugas. Each yuga has its own avatar, giving a yuga dharma. We're back to the word dharma, right? So this yuga dharma is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Thank you. So that verse is there. Krishna Varnam Trisha Krishnam Sango Pangasta Parshadam Yagyar Sangitana Praya Jandihi Sumedisha. That in this age, the Yuga avatar comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He has a golden complexion. And he's always chanting Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. The word Krishna Varnam means the syllables Krishna are coming out of his mouth. He comes with his aides. He comes with his close associates. And his weapons, the holy names, and Jiva Goswami's, his beauty, is also a weapon. He uses to disarm people like Prakashananda. And those who are intelligent will worship him by the sacrifice of Sankirtan. Yagya, Sankirtana Praya, chiefly by that. So then a subsequent verse, or the verse after that, says, therefore, this Kali Yuga, this one, in which Krishna has appeared, or just before Krishna appeared, and Lord Chaitanya has appeared, once in a day of Brahma. It's very rare. He's like, hit the lottery. You know? How many Kali Yugas are there in a day of Brahma? It's like, what? 4,320,000,000. And this is the one that Lord Chaitanya has appeared, and we just appeared 500 years after it. It's like a split second later. We're practically contemporaries, isn't it? So how fortunate is that? So he said, therefore, kalin sabarjayantyaya guna gyasara bhaginaha yatra sangitane naiva sarvasvato abhilabhite. This is the nine yogendras speaking, these great yogis. So they say, therefore, those who are really know the essence of things, sarva bhaginaha,
and who are Aryans. They're, you know, wise and progressive. They worship this Kali Yuga, Sabhaji and Gunagya, because just by the process of Sankirtan, congregational chanting, morning and evening, a few minutes from now, Sankirtan, one can achieve all of one's desires. Sarva Svarta, the word Svarta means the need of the soul, the goal of the soul. You know, not some external goal, but your actual goal, which is to be reunited with Krishna in loving service. So isn't that a wonderful thing? How wonderful can that be? But it means we have to take it seriously. How to perfect the chanting. Anyone can chant, and we should chant. And the chanting will give us an opportunity to enter the house of bhakti through this door of surrender, by accepting the favorable and rejecting the unfavorable, and relying on Krishna for protection. You know, this is really heavy duty. And for maintenance, everybody's freaked out about their maintenance. You know, who can just rely on Krishna for maintenance? We saw Srila Prabhupada do it, right? When he took vanaprastha and sannyas, he practically had nothing. Whatever he had, he was spending on back to God at paper, you know, a magazine, he called it a magazine, and handing it out. You know, that's full surrender. And, you know, Atmanikshepa Karpanye, maintaining this humble position and having no interest separate from Krishna. So, is it possible to do that? Only if we really take the chanting seriously. Only if we allow Krishna to, you know, enter our hearts and try to, you know, give up those things which are impediments on the strength of the holy name. So this is how, you know, this verse makes so much sense. It is really the springboard to bhakti, sarva dharma paricharya. As Prabhupada says, the Bhagavatam begins where the Bhagavad Gita ends. You know, once one is serious about surrendering to Krishna and thinking of him, becoming his devotee, etc., then the Bhagavatam opens up. And right from the beginning, dharma paricharya kaitavotra, that all of the cheating religions are kicked out, all those materially motivated religions. And wholly and solely, he's talking about pure devotional service, which elevates the soul to the ultimate goal. So this is a very important verse. These last two verses and their purports are practically sum up everything, you know, of the Bhagavad Gita's teachings that Prabhupada is giving us. Okay, any questions about this? Yada Babu. Well, what he says before is that the karma yogis and purgi yogis, philosophers, mystics, and devotees are all called transcendentalists. But one who is pure devotee is the best of all. So don't fear, don't hesitate, don't worry. It takes a certain kind of abandon. In other words, it's almost like, you know, to really surrender to Krishna is kind of like jumping off a cliff and being assured that, yes, Krishna will catch you. Because, you know, this is what the faith is. The material life means that we have so many plans for our own maintenance, for our own prosperity in this world and safety, and that there seem to be so many means of doing that in this world. And they seem like they're useful. But ultimately, we can see ultimately that they don't work, that they don't solve our problem. And that, so Krishna consciousness, and you know, the whole Bhagavad Dharma and what Krishna is speaking here, is that you have to go against what seems most logical. Because to Arjuna, you know, it just seemed like, this is really what I want to do. Leave. I do not want to kill Dronacharya. You know, I mean, in the West, we don't have teachers who we regard, we worship. You know? In order to learn this art of war, which is his profession, his very life, and which saved his life many times, you know, he put himself completely under Dronacharya, and he taught him all of these intricacies of war. all these weapons and things that we can't even conceive of, mantric weapons and everything, Arjuna was proficient at, because of the grace of Dronacharya.
He taught him more than his own, than he taught his own son.
Yeah, right. So here is this Dronacharya and worshipable, Bhishma Dev, all of these, I'm going to kill them, who needs the kingdom? You're saying, I don't want, the whole idea was to get the kingdom back. Forget the kingdom, it'll just be soaked with blood of those who I worship and love. So it seemed completely logical for him to do what his gut was telling him to do. But he had the good sense, not to just leave the battlefield, but rather, he's representing us, but he's, of course, a great, intimate devotee, eternal devotee, to surrender to Krishna. You instruct me. How can I overcome this dilemma? So, the ultimate instruction is right here. He says, just do it under my direction. Nimitta matram bhava. You be my hand. Don't worry about right and wrong. Don't worry about Bhishma and Drona. Don't worry about anything. Ultimately, they're going to die anyway. Ultimately, no one dies. I have my little song. Everybody dies, nobody dies. That's right from the Bhagavad Gita. Antavanta hime deha. Nitya sokta sharirina. All the bodies die. They're going to die now, sooner or later. But if you kill them under my direction, then it'll be auspicious for you and for everyone else. Now, materially, that seems crazy. I don't want to kill them. I love them. But spiritually, that's so. This is the real, question. In other words, materially, it doesn't make any sense to sit here 2 hours in the morning and chant this, name, this thing that we're doing. I was in the laundromat the other day, and I was chanting my rounds, doing my laundry, and it's chanting, like I'm, and this lady was looking at me weird, In other words, from the other side, it doesn't make any sense. But from the side of the audience, what you're doing doesn't make any sense. You see? Who's crazy? So, Prabhupada is saying here, don't fear, don't. He's telling everyone, he's telling his devotees here, don't fear, don't hesitate, don't worry. This word hesitate, is important because I was teaching Timmy this verse. Prabhupada would quote all the time. Labdvasudulam amidam bahusambhavante manushamata namanitim abhiyadira. Turnam yateta, napateta numityava nikshaya saya vishayana kalasava tiksa. First let's just focus on the word nikshayasa. Prabhupada was speaking about this morning in the verse, this word nikshayasa. Nikshayasodya, right? So, Kapila Dev's teaching. So, nikshaya means the ultimate good. Now, even forget the NIR prefix, which is an intensifier, but there's shreyas and prayas. These are little phrases that you learn in ISKCON that are so instructive. Shreyas and prayas. Prayas is the immediate good. And Prabhupada gives the example in this lecture of the children. They don't want to know from school. You think that a kid would ever go to kindergarten, first grade, second grade if he didn't have to? No way. He'll play all day, right? That's what Krishna does. He plays all day. So no, but they just wanted to, but the kids, the parents drag the kid to, screaming and yelling to school, and eventually they surrender. So the prayas is immediate play, and the shreyas is, you got to get an education, But the nikshreyas is the ultimate good for the soul. Even the education is ultimately useless. You have to be educated in this, So the point is that this verse has that. And so what it says is that you have attained this human form of life after many, many births, a form which is rare, and which can bring the ultimate good. The word artha, you remember I quoted that verse, swartha, that the Sankirtan can give you. So this word artha dham, it can give you your ultimate goal of life. But it's a temporary, like all other forms of life. Body's temporary. Therefore, it says, turnam yateta, immediately strive. Don't delay, don't hesitate, the Prabhupada says. Turnam, quickly, strive for the ultimate good. As long as your body is still alive. Because it's threatened by death at every moment. Napatet anumrityu. Anumrityu means death is following us at every moment. So strive for nikshayasa, because after all, you vishayakala sarvataksyat. In all the other forms, all kinds of sense gratification are available. And we've been there. Been there, done that. So many lifetimes. Don't waste this life. But turnam yateta. Now I was reading about Krishna's Kaviraj the other day. In context with Nityananda's appearance day, his actual appearance day. I remember I read how Krishna's Kaviraj had this dream, and Lord Nityananda appeared in his dream and said, go to Vrindavan, and everything will be given to you. You know? Next morning, he wakes up and goes for Vrindavan. He doesn't think about, should I, shouldn't I, should I, shouldn't I? I have so many responsibilities. You know, he was living in a house somewhere, you know. And there's probably millions of others who, you know, had that same, maybe didn't have that same dream, but the opportunity. I don't know, maybe not, maybe not. So immediately to act when the good impulse comes and the bona fide destruction comes. So this is what Prabhupada said, don't fear, don't hesitate. There is an element, you know, this is where, you know, it gets serious. To really dive in, take the chanting seriously, the principle seriously, the book seriously, not just dabbling, but to understand that this is life's instructions. These instructions are the most important we'll ever hear. You know, it's not just some book. It's like life and death is being mentioned here. And so, you know, that there's no assurance of who's going to do and who's not going to do it. But the idea is that when we have the faith, and when we can see that Krishna will really protect because we've seen it, you know, and we hear from the Shastra and we see how miracles happen, and yes, things, you know, things go on nicely, then we can surrender. You know, surrendering is a process. It can take lifetimes. But the principles are crystal clear of what it means, you know, to surrender. What were you going to say, Steve?
You can also interpret, you know, he gets a dream, go to Vrindavan, and then he said everything else will be okay.
He's saying everything will be given to you there. Everything, you will find everything.
Everything
yeah.
will be given to you. There's a verse in the Bible that says, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and everything else will follow, something like that.
Same idea.
You know, Krishna is considered no different than Vrindavan.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So you can see that the same example, the same instructions being given just in different words.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when the part of the Bible that, you know, is so appealing to us is that part which, you know, where Jesus is, you know, let the dead bury the dead, you know, come with me, become a fisher of men. What is Sankirtan?
Yeah.
You know, it's the same idea. You're going out and giving so many seeds, so much bait, if you will. And a few are actually taking it and becoming blessed, you know. So it's a universal principle. You have to make a decision. It's either or, you know. Are we going to put our energy and our attention and our investment into the illusion, ultimately which causes suffering? Or are we going to have faith in the words of Shastra and in the words of Guru and the experience and put our investment of our intention, our attention, and life air and so forth in the transcendence, you know, and that's where the key decision for everyone comes. Yes.
Yeah, I have a question that somebody might argue that okay, we have, you know, our philosophy is a personal philosophy, and Krishna is a person here, and Arjuna is a person, and Krishna is saying aham tvam. So Krishna is making a personal promise to Arjuna,
yes,
a specific promise to Krishna to Arjuna that if he fights, he will take care of him. So it's not a promise for everyone. So because other people might concoct stuff and think, but it's a promise to Arjun specifically from one person to another person.
Uh-huh. What were you going to say in response to that?
No, not everything. There are general stuff also, but here is aham tvam. Here Krishna speaking to Arjun and using tvam, you. And you.
Yes, that's true. But we have been assured by Krishna's pure devotee that this is for everybody. Yes, but and not only that, but you can experience that to the degree that you surrender and you this with this formula that you can feel your sinful reactions. You know, getting. In other words, there's a certain burden. You can see, you know, when you see the materialists, it seems like the older ones who've been sinning all their lives. You know, big demons. You know, they're bearing a burden. They're bearing this burden, and it shows in their faces. You know, and you can see the devotees of the same age, you know, 60, 65, 70. They're not bearing that burden. They're not bearing a burden. It's there in their demeanor. It's there in their mood. It's there in their joy. It's there in everything. So there's if you want it, there's empirical evidence that this is for everybody. Yeah. Krishna, yeah.
Also, verse 68 says, "For one who experiences this supreme
state, the devotee has perfection and peace." There's so many. I mean, it's actually wonderful that it's so personal like this. Because this means that Krishna can be as personal with each of us. This is what, you know, so miraculous, and we have to be convinced of this, is that every single one of us has a personal relationship with God. You know, if God is infinite, he can also be infinitely personal. You know, those who are not so infinite, but who are really great, they're still limited. They're way up there and out there, and they're remote from us. But Krishna, because he's infinite, and, you know, infinitely personally, he can have a personal relationship with each of us, and we each have a custom-made relationship with him, because we're all individuals.
But this has to be high stage. Somebody could just decide to do something abominable, say, oh, I'm just for the heck of it, say, I'm surrendering to Krishna, and he's going to protect me, and let me do it.
Yeah, you can say like
and
that, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So you really have to, you know, become his devotee.
Yeah, you
have to offer it. There's formulas here. You can't fake it. You know, you can't cheat Krishna. He'll cheat you. Any other comments or questions? All right, tomorrow we'll go on with this part of the Bhagavad Gita. And we'll see, you know, it all culminates. And it's some very wonderful purports here for all of us. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.